Good afternoon. This is Paul Gallagher opening the LaRouche show for January 19th, 2008. We're going to have a number of people on the discussion of the topic, Destroying the Campaign of Michael Mussolini Bloomberg. First, let me just sum up that Lyndon LaRouche's webcast of 2 days ago, which in itself needs no introduction, on the subject of the 6 months into the greatest ever financial crash, had tremendous impact. LaRouche this morning described it as a howling success. The number of sites at which people were listening doubled from the last webcast less than two months ago. He was bombarded with questions from congressional offices, presidential campaigns, state legislators themselves, union leaders, all on the focus of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act, how it would work, how it should be, who implements it, how it's implemented, and on the broader subject of the economic crash that's underway and how it can be reversed by this legislation. LaRouche's own assessment of the impact of it was that after that webcast 2 days ago, by the reactions to it, we've changed politics in the United States that showed a shift in the thinking of leaders, both about how serious the financial and economic crash is and also what can be done about it and LaRouche's role in pointing the way. So those things are all archived on LaRouche Pub and LaRouche Pack websites, the transcripts and the audio of the entire and video of the entire webcast. Today we're going to take on the subject of the real enemy of this organizing process to reverse the financial crash. That enemy, the emergence of a Mussolini fascist drive for a campaign of Michael Bloomberg, mayor of New York, for president. I have on Harley Schlanger, the West Coast coordinator of LaRouche PAC, John Stewart, of an organizer in California of the LaRouche Youth Movement, Tony Chaitkin, who's a researcher for EIR, organizer for LPAC, and has been looking into this subject. So let me start with Harley, because he has to jump off in just 10 minutes or so in order to be on the, I think, the We the People radio network on a talk show. Harley, let's introduce this threat coming from the direction of Bloomberg. You were at a strange gathering recently, which got a certain amount of publicity in Oklahoma City, where this thing began to go very public. What was that all about?
Well, it was a conference in, actually it was in Norman, Oklahoma, and it was presided over by David Boren and Sam Nunn. And it included 17 mostly former elected officials. One person described them as has-beens and never-wases. And the question was, what were they doing there? One of the people of the 17 was Michael Bloomberg. And the media was there en masse to see if Bloomberg was going to announce his campaign for president. Now, what they discussed was pretty much vanilla civics 101 in the public meeting. We have a crisis. We have to get together. We need nonpartisanship. And, you know, a lot of people are saying this. We need nonpartisanship. Why all the fighting? Why can't we get along? Well, there's a simple reason for that. You've got one group of people pushing fascist economic policies. And as a result, there should be opposition. There should be fighting over policy. The idea of nonpartisanship is the old Mussolini idea of the Führer, the leader above party. And by running wrecking operations in the Democratic Party and the Republican Party to divide the vote among the candidates, the people behind Bloomberg, and this is the Wall Street fascist crowd, they're trying to create an opening so that Bloomberg could come in, as LaRouche said, a knight on a white horse or an ass on a white horse. Bloomberg would come in with his billions of dollars above party, and what would be the content of the policy? It would be brutal austerity, as Tony can detail we're seeing in New York City. I've seen what they're doing in California. Schwarzenegger was the poster boy for the so-called post-partisanship. And what today, ironically, as we're talking now on the LaRouche show, Arnie and Bloomberg are holding hands at a transit stop in Los Angeles with Governor Ed Rendell from Pennsylvania to announce the formation of a new nonprofit organization to promote public-private partnerships for infrastructure. Now, this is nothing but Mussolini corporatism, and the author, the two key people in this idea of public-private partnerships are the two people that LaRouche has identified as the leaders of this Wall Street fascist current in the United States, George Shultz and Felix Roatan. And so the same two people who carried out the military coup in Chile and imposed the fascist dictator, General Pinochet, they're the ones behind Schwarzenegger in California, and this is the crew that's backing Bloomberg.
And this the slogan of this is a government of national unity. Is that right? Above parties, we pull everybody together in a unity government. This is very, very much directly Mussolini's speeches of 1922, for example, when he continually threatened to dissolve the parliament, talked about the 40 million Italians who were above the militants of the parties, who merely wanted to work, sweat, discipline themselves, work some more. And he disdained the parties and called himself above that. This is what's coming from that. But I wanted to ask you, what's the connection between this development, and the financial crash that hit in July, August of last year, and is now devastating the U.S. economy?
Well, it's the obvious reason for it, because the people who are behind the Schwarzenegger-Bloomberg post-partisanship are the ones whose economic policies have been looting the whole world with so-called free trade and globalization, and they've been looting the U.S. population. And what we've seen with the so-called subprime crisis is really a collapse of the banking system. Now, we can go into that more in a moment, but on this above-party thing, this is really the key test, because what they're saying is constituents respond to narrow interests, and therefore you need something above constituencies. Now, what are the so-called narrow interests that constituents are responding to? Well, how about having a home? How about having a job? How about having a job that pays for food for the family? How about having health care? How about having a future? The fact of the matter is that many people in the United States are beginning to get a whiff that we're not just in a recession, we're in a deep depression. And so the idea is that you get these characters, like Schwarzenegger, he's a puppet, he's a clown, he's a cartoonish character who couldn't even act very well. He's out there basically saying, I feel your pain. You know, he's practically a billionaire himself with a big real estate swindler in California. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't feel anybody's pain. He's out there inflicting pain, but he's saying, I will inflict it equally as long as we don't tax the corporate cartels, the pharmaceuticals, the insurance companies, the financial interests who give me my campaign money. And so this is what corporate fascism is all about. It's where you have cartels, financial and corporate cartels above the state, who put forward a leader who says he's acting in the interests of everyone. And so, therefore, you can't protest the sacrifice you're making. You have to make that sacrifice for the nation. This is exactly what I've seen in Bloomberg speeches now, where New York City is beginning to be hit by a real estate bubble pop. And, boy, you talk about real estate bubbles. The only one bigger than California was New York City's.
Mm-hmm. And Bloomberg would be a billionaire's ticket, obviously. I should notice that we've received information directly from the head of the Reform Party in Mississippi, Ted Weil, that the Bloomberg campaign organizers have been to see him, trying to get the Reform Party line in Mississippi for a presidential campaign of Bloomberg.
And Paul, he was in Austin, Texas yesterday. He had some meetings supposedly on health care issues, but also I'm told that there's a draft Bloomberg committee in Texas that's been activated, because Texas is one of the hardest states to get on the ballot. And after the primary in early March, you have 60 days to file 75,000 petition signatures. So they're trying to get ahead of steam and motion so they have the petitioners ready to go the day after the primary.
Yeah, so I think we can I think there was also a meeting with this Clay Mulford fellow who was the campaign manager for the Perot campaign, looking for that ballot line in Texas and in other states. So I think we can say there's no question that whatever Bloomberg may be saying at the moment, there's no question he's preparing to announce a run for the presidency. The very early primaries and the early selection of the Democratic and Republican candidates, if that's what it goes, will open that potential up further. What I wanted to ask you, Harley, is how do we attack this? What condition is it in? And in terms of destroying it, how do we attack it? I understand there's the two of them are out there, and you just got a report right now, Schwarzenegger and Bloomberg in Los Angeles at a meeting.
Well, we have a large number of LaRouche Youth Movement members outside the meeting with signs with pictures of Arnie and Bloomberg together and Mussolini looking on approvingly. And it says, if you like Mussolini, you'll love Bloomberg. They're out there singing. And we're also, I mean, look, this is a very serious operation we've got to run. The problem is this is part of a destruction of the Democratic Party. And this is where Nancy Pelosi, and who works under Felix Roetten, comes in. California is a Democratic Party state. There's no reason we should have a fascist governor in California, except that the Democrats, instead of fighting this, have been going along with Schwarzenegger. And it's a long story what's behind it. It's basically they're terrified that if they don't go along with Schwarzenegger, then he'll do worse things to their constituents with the budget, that they can minimize the pain by going along. Now, the saboteur in this in California, the two saboteurs are Pelosi and Feinstein, who are part of the same operation as Schwarzenegger, with ties to George Shultz, including real estate connections through Feinstein's husband, and ties to Roetten. And then there's the complicating factor with Schwarzenegger of the Kennedy family. And Lynn has been joking recently that Arnie is the fascist son that Joe Kennedy never had. So what we're doing is we're going out to the Democrats and we're saying, look, we need FDR. We need infrastructure. We need the LaRouche Homeowner and Bank Protection Act. These are your constituents. The needs of the people who will vote Democratic will be met by rallying support for LaRouche's FDR-style recovery policy. And if you did that in California, you'd overwhelm Schwarzenegger. Now, in 2005, under the leadership of the LaRouche Youth Movement, we defeated Schwarzenegger on four referenda, which we lumped together as the Make Arnie the Dictator Act. And the teachers' union, the nurses' union, the police and firefighters came out, the minorities came out, and we beat Schwarzenegger. But then they retooled him as Mr. Infrastructure. And the infrastructure is really just this public-private partnerships, which maybe, Paul, you can talk about when I get off, because I think it's important that people understand this, that Arnie said, don't worry, we're going to create jobs, we're going to build things. But don't forget, Hitler built the Autobahn, and Mussolini did infrastructure. They're not talking about real jobs or paying people. They're talking about basically channeling huge amounts of state money into private firms, and then essentially setting up toll roads. Schwarzenegger announced he's going to close 48 parks. He's going to be closing emergency rooms, especially in poor areas. And so this is nothing but fascist austerity. And the fact that, you know, we used to talk about fascism with a Democratic face. Imagine fascism with a Terminator face. That's what Arnie represents. And Bloomberg was called by Schwarzenegger his soulmate.
You've
got to tell the truth and just get that out.
Okay, Harley, I understand you have to leave at this point for your radio interview. Let me bring in John Stewart, who's in Oakland, who's a leader of the LaRouche Youth Movement organizing out there. John, I know you've been organizing for in Sacramento with the state legislators for the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act and against the for the solutions to the crash. Harley just referred to it. How has this changed now with Schwarzenegger? Schwarzenegger's declared a fiscal emergency, is that it?
Yeah. On the 10th, he gave a speech and declared an emergency, yeah.
So what's the significance of this in terms of the state of the nation?
The state of the nation?
The state and the nation, I'm sorry.
Well, what we have is we have, Harley kind of touched on a little bit, but he kind of underscored this point of how Democrats in the legislature should be fighting Schwarzenegger but aren't. Mm-hmm. And Harley kind of gave a reason for why they're not, the way that they're thinking, which is allowing them to not. But what we have, as far as I can tell, the announcement of a state of emergency over financial concerns by him on the 10th is going to give him an opportunity to do extra things and take extra powers to act over and above the legislature that he didn't have before he had declared this emergency. And so the funny thing is it's like what it means for the state is it means that, as Harley said, he's going to go ahead and he's going to carry out these cuts, which are very brutal, very drastic cuts, as in the closing of parks and the closing of other things relating to health care and other social services and other programs that people need, that people depend on. Yes, he's going to be doing these things, but there's always this, there's this saying, as goes California, so goes the nation. California represents a precedent in matters like this. And I think that's also why the Bloomberg operation for his operation for the presidency is it's important to stop it in California. It's important to fight the ideology in California. It's important to defeat the political measures that spring from the ideology in California. But it seems to me that that's what this represents, is that you have a legislature here which could be doing much, much more to oppose what is blatantly fascism as a way to protect the rest of the country from going the same way in a presidential election.
Now, how are they reacting to this declaration of economic or fiscal emergency?
Well, the funny thing, Sacramento is an interesting place, and I'll just tell you a little bit about what we've done. Lyndon LaRouche came out with the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act in August, right? So it's been round about 5 or 6 months that we've been working on this. And some of the meetings that we're having with state agencies or with legislators, we're finding out that they began getting seriously on the question of home foreclosures and the effect on the banks and the effect on people only about a month and a half ago or 2 months ago. So it's actually clear to them that we were going up there in a public way to discuss this matter before everybody else was. Now, what we've done is we've had, somewhere between 40 and 50 meetings over that six-month period with different offices in the legislature, different community organizations, advocacy groups, and whatnot, mm-hmm. on the question of the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. And what we found is that there's a varying response. There's a varying response. The actual thing, what we have with the thing is that the aides respond in a very characteristic way. The aides usually are willing to talk. Usually are willing to consider the policy. Usually are willing to, entertain the idea of the state intervening on the federal government to go ahead with something like the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act. And so you have this thing where there's been an interesting relationship that has been advanced. It was an existing relationship, but it's been advanced between state legislature and the aides and the LaRouche Youth Movement as an interventionist force, as a political force. And so the reading that we've been able to discern, really, is that people are in support of the policy. I mean, the policy is a good idea. They say the first thing that they get is they understand that their approach is just a Band-Aid approach, that the five bills that have come out from the Assembly Banking Committee is a Band-Aid approach. They understand that. And they also understand that our approach is not a Band-Aid approach. Now, then the problem, though, that comes up, and this then ties back into what has been the response to Schwarzenegger announcing his fiscal emergency. The problem is that people, for any number of reasons, are afraid to admit the severity of the crisis. They're afraid to admit the degree to which the subprime banking crisis is currently and will continue to overflow in the rest of the financial system and the rest of the actual real economy, the physical economy.
But
people are unwilling to admit that.
But it would seem that now Schwarzenegger himself is calling their bluff, so to speak, and telling them, I'm taking emergency powers, this is a crisis.
Exactly, yeah. It is. But then, see, the thing is that what people want to do is they want to find a way. Usually what they're doing, all that I've been able to discern about the way that they're approaching the housing crisis, is they're attempting to act in a way such that they can point to it and say, look, we've done something on the crisis. We don't have to go any further. Mm-hmm. They're effectively attempting to act in a way that will block them from having to do anything serious.
And there's a tremendous budget gap deficit, obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, if it's $15 billion or $20 billion. It's monstrous in the California budget. Is this coming from the collapse of housing sales and values and foreclosures in California that everybody knows about?
Well, yeah, it's a little more than just the foreclosures. It's kind of an interesting thing because it's been about, over the past 6 months that we've been on this, we've been getting extensive briefings, repeated briefings, and there's kind of a picture developed of how the thing is going to play out, and it is playing out as the picture was presented. But you basically have that when George Bush was making all these claims about how GDP was going up and up and up and up and up, and there were all these new jobs being created and whatnot, well over half of that stuff was all in the real estate market. And a lot of that was in California.
Mm-hmm.
That's California's big thing, was the rising real estate market and the skyrocketing prices and all the opportunity and come invest and whatnot. And that was California. But what you had based on that was you had basically an economy set up on a bubble. So you would have a lot of construction workers, a lot of painters, a lot of people who do masonry. But install marble and whatnot. You basically had an entire section of the economy built up around the speculation in housing and the housing boom. And so what we have now with the, first of all, just on the question of foreclosures, if there's a foreclosure in your area, your house loses equity, right, if you're the neighbor of somebody who has been foreclosed on. That has a major effect on what people are able to do with their income. Because if you lose equity and you cannot refinance, that means that if you have been relying on refinancing, which a lot of people have been doing for money, you're not going to be able to go out and spend it. So the collapse that we're seeing in California, it's actually a nonlinear thing. And this is why Lyndon LaRouche's approach to economics is necessary to understand what's happening. Is because what we're having happen is a real dynamic. Based on what we've done around the real estate market, the entire thing is coming unraveled now, and it's starting to hit people in places and in ways that they didn't think it was going to hit. Like, obviously, it's going to hit on the budget. You know, there's less revenue, there's less taxable revenue. But it's starting to hit in other ways, too, kind of out of the corner of people's eyes. And that's what is the interesting thing with the state legislatures and with the aides, is as the crisis gets worse, we have seen that they've had to admit it. Like it used to be 4 years ago, 5 years ago, the word crisis would not come out of their mouth. The word financial crash would not come out of their mouth, and it is now, and they recognize that's a shift that they've had to make. But the real fight now is on the question of the solution. And I think a lot of it is going to come in empowering some of these Democrats to grow the balls to stop kissing Schwarzenegger's ass.
Okay, that was, excuse me, but that was just the same kind of shift that we saw from the national officials as well as state officials of various states that were shooting questions at Lyndon LaRouche at his webcast the day before yesterday. Let me just remind people that this is the LaRouche Show. We're discussing destroying the presidential campaign of Michael Mussolini Bloomberg, which is emerging as a fascist threat in this crash, in this crisis. And I'd like to bring in and ask a couple of questions of Tony Chaitkin of EIR, who's also with me here in the studio, who's been looking into the sort of underworld antecedents of this, where it really came from. Tony, on the dynamics of the way this election, turning of the election is intended to happen by Bloomberg's backers, you wrote a piece several months ago now which looked pretty prescient. It was on Rudy Giuliani. It was called The Rudy Bomb Diffused. Why don't you just locate that for a minute, because that really leads into this.
Lyndon LaRouche had forecast from direct discussion with people that knew about this and his own thinking that Rudy Giuliani was put up by oligarchs to fail at a point when it would be in their to their advantage in to bring about the surprise dark horse candidacy of the guy coming in to substitute for Giuliani, namely Michael Bloomberg, his successor as mayor of New York City. And when we looked into Giuliani's background, this was confirmed by the obvious fact that he is from a mafia family background, that he is he has a terrible record in politics, and he's a brutal a scumbag, and that the policies that he would represent would be more effectively put across by Bloomberg. And this goes into the apparatus in the financier oligarchy, Rohatyn, Schultz, etc., that directly put Bloomberg into his billions and into politics.
So we
published this, and what's happened since then is that
essentially saying that Giuliani was going to fade.
Yeah,
and then, be replaced by the threat of a Bloomberg.
That's right. And then Newsweek magazine with Lally Weymouth, the daughter of Catherine Graham of the Washington Post and of the Lazard Fair banking operation. Newsweek had an expose front page of just what we said of Giuliani's mafia background, and they also had a front page praise and knight in the shining armor story about Bloomberg. It's obscene. It's so transparent, especially once we circulated this. So that anyway, they had to, I think that this is we helped to detonate Giuliani's campaign prematurely, and he's I don't think he's a serious candidate at this point.
Yeah, and I think that's quite apt. And once that had been done, and I think everybody can see now that it has been done, and we helped to do it to prematurely detonate that Giuliani balloon. Immediately, then the Bloomberg option, so-called, emerged and began to be seen really in a lot of different places. What's the actual strategy behind him? Who's behind him, and what's the strategy of their pushing his campaign?
Well, first of all, let's just mention the fact that it is not Bloomberg's money that is really behind his potential candidacy. The money is crucial. His own having 12 or 13 billion is crucial to quickly deploy that into a political candidacy. But he, first of all, made that money as a direct representative, not only of the world financial oligarchy, but as a representative and an advisor to that oligarchy in New York and London, promoting the bubble, the very bubble that is now engulfing the entire world, the financial disaster. He set up, he was a partner in Solomon Brothers, and set up a computer operation and programs, and then in a private company, terminals, special corporate terminals, to instruct people as to how to deal with credit swaps, derivatives, mortgage-backed securities, all of this poison through which leading financiers would make a killing, and regardless of the effect on the world financial system. So this became his private empire. Then you see the irony of him now coming forward to say, I am going to save the country from this crash, which he himself is entirely, all of his career is a product of him reaping the cream that was looted out of the system by this bubble. In 2006 summer, he met with Michael Steinhardt in New York City, who is the mafia background in his own family, I would say underling to Felix Roetten, in the Democratic Leadership Council. And his the question, the strategy of a Bloomberg independent candidacy was put on the table then, and it was starting to spread. They hooked him up with Lieberman in over in Connecticut, and Bloomberg entirely backed Lieberman's reelection into the Senate against the Democrats who had rejected him. And you see right away Bloomberg's relationship to Roetten on his side.
Felix Roetten.
Felix Roetten, the actual money, the guy that stands behind this anti-Franklin Roosevelt factor in the Democratic Party. He is on the board of the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, the right-wing faction. But he is the channel for that whole anti-FDR faction to the world financier oligarchy. Mr. Bloomberg and Mr. Roetten appeared together in a forum November 1st, 2007, which was when Roetten spoke, devoted to a discussion of the financial dictatorship that Roetten had over New York City in the 1970s. It launched in the United States this whole idea of austerity, cutbacks, crushing the poor, crushing unions, as the task for our age. And this is what is on the agenda. Then if you look over in California with Schwarzenegger, his soulmate, Bloomberg's soulmate, you have the direct management of Schwarzenegger by George Shultz, who's the Republican Party in tandem leader with Roetten in the Democratic Party. George Shultz and his wife are the direct managers for Schwarzenegger. His Mrs. Shultz runs this private foundation for the state. She's the coordinator of the state of California's protocol, and she runs the connections between the governor and U.S. and foreign dignitaries and money people in supposedly getting business into California. But that's Arnie's channel to the world financier oligarchy. If you take then look at Bloomberg.
Before you do, yeah, Tony, okay. I want to ask John another question. Because so from what you're saying, you have Felix Roetten, who was the, according to Nancy Pelosi's public announcements, Felix Roetten was the main consultant and speaker and actor in the meetings that she had with a few other Democratic leaders to plan a so-called stimulus, which LaRouche just denounced. So there was Roetten in the middle of the Democrats' congressional move for a stimulus. You have Bloomberg, a partner of his, essentially, political, financial partner, coming out, who's been in a Democrat, he's been an independent, he's been a Republican, coming out as an above-party presidential campaign, and you have Schwarzenegger. They seem to be a very, very tight group moving in this direction. John, Harley was mentioning that Bloomberg and Schwarzenegger spoke together in California today. Was the LaRouche Youth Movement, were they there? Were they going after that meeting?
Yeah, that's what he was saying. What it sounded like to me is that we've got a contingent outside, which I'm sure is got very large signs, maybe a banner, definitely singing, distributing literature. And we have two people inside. We have Quincy, who's the vice chair of the Black Caucus, and Sam. They're both elected members of the L.A. Central Committee, Democratic Central Committee. They're on the inside. And the point that Harley was making is that he wants them to very clearly put the line out, put the word out, put it out, that the response to this from reasonable people is that this Bloomberg-Schwarzenegger operation is nothing more than Mussolini corporatism.
So the LaRouche Youth Movement is taking that stand in on the West Coast as a whole. Again,
yes.
Against California being used as a launch point for this campaign, in effect, for this Mussolini campaign by Bloomberg.
Correct.
In effect. What is the strength of the LaRouche movement? Is it growing? And how have they come to have these positions in the Democratic Party?
Well, I'll tell you, one thing that's interesting, one measure, it's an interesting measure for what it's worth as a measure, is that we noticed yesterday in discussing with a city council member that the slanders of LaRouche and the slanders of the LaRouche movement and specifically the LaRouche youth movement are morphing. They're having to morph. They're having to change because the old-time slanders of the 1970s and 1980s are kind of recognized as unreasonable. But the problem is that we have a political effect which will not stop. And which will not go away. And when you ask somebody, and behind closed doors and in discussions in Sacramento and whatnot, people ask. They say, "Oh, who's the LaRouche Youth Movement? What are these guys about?" And people make the point. They say, "Well, they're the guys that when they get involved in something, things change." So what's going on is that we have a developing conception of political deployment. And we have a developing organization of political deployment here on the West Coast. And so you have myself. I'm elected to the Alameda County Democratic Central Committee. And then you've got Quincy, you've got Cody, you've got Ardina, Quincy, or Sam, other people down in Los Angeles who are elected. I'm not quite sure what's going on in Seattle. But in California as a whole, we have demonstrated time and time again in Sacramento, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, in public and in private meetings, we have demonstrated time and time again that our analysis of the economy and the direction of the economy has been correct, that our analysis of the direction of the political dynamic, which can't be separated from the question of the economy, has been correct. And people recognize this. It's demonstrated. We have coming up in Richmond tomorrow, this is a point which should be made, on a Tuesday, sorry, not tomorrow, on Tuesday, we're going to have the Homeowners and Bank Protection Act as an official agenda item of the regular city council meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be what's called a first reading, and the kind of the discussion, the debate is going to take place along the lines of should Richmond decide to consider a resolution on this, right? Which is kind of a weird, it's just a bureaucratic thing because they're already considering a resolution on it by having it as an agenda item. But so this is an interesting case. This is a city council where we've testified numerous times. We can use it kind of as an example of what we've done across the state in the Bay Area and Southern California. We can use this as a microcosm example. We've testified there a number of times. We're very well known in the community because of high visibility deployments of the distribution of literature, setting up tables and doing political organizing. I had one specific case where I met a guy at the BART station who, we were deployed at the Richmond BART station. I met a guy there who had crossed us several times at our activity at the city council one time at a meet the mayor event for the mayor of Richmond. And he, you know, he spoke in a respectful tone. He was respectful because these guys get a sense of the level of dedication that the LaRouche Youth Movement puts into our goal. So, you know, so we're known. We're very, very well known. And so you've got this thing where at the Contra Costa, Richmond is in Contra Costa County. So the other night at the Contra Costa Democratic Central Committee, myself and two other members of the youth movement went as guests. And what we found there was interesting. We found people who represented about three different institutions that we had intervened on very forcefully and in a very known way. And so then in the discussions after the official bureaucratic central committee meeting broke up, it was very fertile. The ground was very fertile, and it was because the activity of the youth movement has the effect of shaping the activity of the Democratic Party and the legislature almost as if from the outside. That's the funny thing, is it's not from the outside. But it's got an effect of determining the environment in which others have to act. And that's how we change things. We don't go to people and say, do this for us, do that for us, do this for us. We say, we're going to organize the hell out of your constituency.
Okay,
we're going to shape the environment in which you exist.
So we're going to be looking eagerly for the report of what has happened with the intervention around and against that Bloomberg-Schwarzenegger meeting that's going on this morning. And again, the significance of that for the LaRouche Youth Movement taking on those two in California at a time when they're supposedly putting out a strategy for infrastructure development. Now, that has a background. I want to go back to Tony. From the New York side and from Bloomberg's own policies, who's behind him, and what does it mean to say this is Bloomberg fascism coming out at this point?
Well, Bloomberg is publicly known as a liberal in the sense of a social liberal. And people have to understand this historically is the character of those who have promoted and managed fascism and things like fascism in our recent centuries history. The British colonial leaders in Africa or some other place were total degenerates, sexual degenerates, religious liberals, like Nero or like the Hitler SA. Sex degenerates. The entire Wall Street crowd in the 1920s and 30s that promoted Hitler and Mussolini and their leaders, their senior partners in London, such as Montague Norman, these are social liberals, religious liberals. And so what is the fascist part of this? If they're easygoing on degeneracy or on being atheist or whatever it is. Look at the proposals, as shallow as they were, as down in Oklahoma. Boren and the other people were on radio interviews saying, here's what an independent national unity government is going to do. It has two tasks, fighting terrorism and balancing the budget by cutting entitlements. In other words, cutting Social Security, cutting what people think they're entitled to in the population. If you look at Bloomberg's policies in New York City, for example, he has continued the savage cutbacks in the living standards of the poorest people. Welfare has disappeared because the welfare offices have been closed and people have been kicked off of welfare. People who were in houses or apartments were forced out, thousands of families forced out by the bubble, the housing bubble, the prices. And Bloomberg, as mayor, simply put out investigators to see if any of the people who are homeless and clamoring now to get into homeless shelters had any relatives. If you have a relative that is alive, you now cannot go to a homeless shelter beyond one night, because you're redefined as not homeless. So there are thousands now additionally on the streets as a result of this. His policy is defined globally from what he writes from his London base. He has a big home in London.
Bloomberg does.
Bloomberg, yeah. Yes. And he, one of his most important customers for his financial consulting operation with these terminals and these programs that he put together, before he had the simply Bloomberg reporting, you know, media service, was the Bank of England, and then the other central banks in Europe. But what he does from his London base, he writes for example, in London magazines, that we must have absolute free trade. We cannot have protectionism. There can be no interference, really, in imperial free trade. And this is seen by his friends, other liberals like George Shultz, for example. He's a liberal because he's in favor of legalizing pot, like Milton Friedman was, and dope smoking, things like this. But what this means is that we are going to manage scarce resources. We're going to manage shrinking resources globally. And so that nations that wish to have a share of these resources are going to be disappointed. You use environmentalism, another social liberal point of view, to get away with that as an excuse for savage restrictions on the use of resources. And what is so ironic here is that the New York City, which is the base for these parasites, the base for these firms like the Harriman firm and others, the Morgans, and that sponsored Hitler and Mussolini, all of them liberals. They don't have Confederate flags and rednecks. They, you know, they're charitable while they're sponsoring Hitler. But what is so ironic is that New York City itself became a powerful city because of not just manufacturing, and it was the manufacturing center in this country, but the measures such as the Erie Canal and other measures taken by our nation to open up new, completely new inventions in agriculture and industry throughout the country, into the West, and into steelmaking and into electricity, that expanded the resources that were available. So this is, New York City was in a sense a capital of physical, inspiring physical economic growth and totally new resources. And these parasites are saying, we're going to manage the entire world, quote, fight terrorism, unquote, by destroying the power of humanity and any nation and our nation to ever again do what America did in the past, and which created New York City as a power, which they rule over, both Giuliani and Bloomberg.
Are the journals of finance, like the Wall Street Journal, Financial Times in London and so forth, are they pushing Bloomberg to run?
Yes.
Is his own website doing, I mean, his own media?
I went to the press conference in Washington, D.C. a few days ago of the draft Michael Bloomberg committee. It was two men. And they said, in response to my question and to other reporters' questions, basically, we cannot say what his policies are, domestic or foreign. All we can say, and they listed problems of entitlement or other things, they hinted at this, you know, austerity, radical austerity, but didn't put it across. But what they said was, when he is elected, as he will be, President of the United States, I assure you that since he doesn't owe anyone anything, he has billions, so that he's his own man,
above,
which is laughable. He's above the
party.
Therefore, he will be able to bring in experts, regardless of party, who will then create the policies and the programs that are needed to save the country. This is the purest example that I've ever seen in American politics, in our history, of the Venice, Italy style of government, where a crisis is created really as a result of the catastrophes from the criminal activities of the very people that are now telling you they're going to save the country. And then a government is put together entirely from behind the scenes. You don't have to abolish the Constitution. You simply disregard it until the point where maybe there's some sort of a direct change in the middle of wars and further catastrophes in the kind of dark age that would come with this leadership. This is Venice-style government, and they're saying this openly, that that's what they're going to do.
Okay, but this is taking place, obviously, in the context of the Republican and Democratic, the party's campaigns for president, for the nominees for president going on. You could say on the Republican side, there's not a lot of enthusiasm for any of the candidates that they have out there. That might leave a vacuum. On the Democratic side, clearly an awful lot of people are being pushed and changed in their view of this campaign. Everyone knows that the economy is now said by everybody to be the number one subject. The economic collapse is what they want the candidates to deal with, and these campaigns seem to be full of recruits and full of energy. But you do hear from Obama's campaign this theme of being above parties. Is there also a relationship between what's going on there and the Bloomberg option?
Well, aside from the fact that Barack Obama went to New York and met and strategized with Michael Bloomberg, the cameras were rolling outside the restaurant where they were inside on the other side of the glass and talking in that breakfast meeting. But Obama's own British-style politics are more and more transparent. He says recently that the Republican Party of Reagan and later, I guess, Newt Gingrich were the idea people in recent decades. The Democrats, including Bill Clinton, were not. I can be above party. I can bring Republicans in. I'm not so identified with the Democratic Party. But his own Chicago identity is totally bound up with this financier base, particularly related to George Shultz, who was at the University of Chicago, Milton Friedman there. Obama has been a longtime employee of the University of Chicago. He's a lecturer in constitutional law there. His wife, since 1996, has been a very highly paid University of Chicago employee. His whole premise there is based on a worldview similar to that of his father, who was in Kenya as a finance a top financial advisor to the Kenyan government and served as Kenya's intermediary with London on their whole financial relationship. His family never supported the independence struggle over there in Kenya, but the playing of the race card as has been done on his behalf is really a British the British school of race relations, as they have done to try to get people divided on tribal and ethnic basis all throughout the world. So this is a very unwholesome enterprise. The Chicago power base that was put in there against the old Lincoln industrial base, centered on the University of Chicago and the creation of the mercantile exchange by people associated with Friedman and the University of Chicago. And these are the backers of Obama. These are the people. He actually worked, and his wife was a member of the firm of Sibley and Austin, which is the law firm that actually managed the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. So he has a he has a direct relationship to this oligarchy that is backing Bloomberg's candidacy.
Well, in that case, I want to mention to our listeners that on the LaRouche's national campaign, his national spokeswoman, he's not running a campaign, his national spokeswoman, Deborah Hanania Freeman, wrote an article which is on the LaRouche Pub and LaRouche PAC websites now on the New Hampshire primary result as a turning point. Clinton's fight for invisible Americans can save the U.S. And LaRouche himself was asked, I think, by someone in one of the campaigns at the webcast, if Obama himself is putting forth this government of national unity above parties idea, at least as a major theme, is he an alternative Bloomberg in this case, or is he likely going to be knocked down the way Giuliani was?
I think it's the latter. I think that that the people that are when Rush Limbaugh and this whole crowd in the Republican in that style of Republican are celebrating Obama, it's not because they like him particularly, but because he's there to stop the Clintons from coming back into the White House. And I think that it's so it wouldn't take a whole lot to knock Obama down from the same crowd that's aiming at Hillary Clinton now, so that they don't want any Democrat, even Obama, to be president, because Obama is not in the same category as Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg is entirely and in the middle of the apparatus of the financier oligarchy in London and New York. Obama is a talented, power-seeking individual who came in a post-industrial liberal in the city of Chicago, and his whole idea is this post-industrialism. But I think that the ways that Karl Rove and Cheney and this whole apparatus have for smashing people on a racial basis and so forth, it would certainly be directed against him, and you would not have an Obama presidency.
John, we have only, John Stewart again in Oakland, we have only a couple of minutes left, but do you want to, do you have anything more to say on the fight out there between the HBPA, LaRouche's Homeowner and Bank Protection Act, and this Schwarzenegger fascist policy?
Yeah, the last thing I would say is that the way it's seeming to make the most sense to me comes from something that Lynn said in a statement, some statement, a number of months ago. But he made the point that, because it's, I've always wondered, how is it possible that the United States could go fascist? I've always wondered, we have the great history, we have Benjamin Franklin, we have Lincoln in our history, Roosevelt, and I've always wondered, would the United States population ever actually really accept fascism? Would, like, a city police department really deploy fascist tactics against, you know, its neighbors and whatnot? And, I kind of didn't think so, but then the point that Lynn was making was that at a certain point, the demoralization goes so deep and the cultural pessimism becomes so deep, and the fact that there's not a solution, the fact that nobody knows a solution is so pertinent to people that they're willing to accept the first thing that comes as a solution, which would be this, you know, Schwarzenegger-type approach or the Bloomberg-type approach. And so the one thing I would say is that what we need to do, and I guess I know what we're going to continue to do, is bring people the solution. Because the solution, and then developing the ability to continuously become better at presenting the solution clearly, is what we're going to need.
Well, again,
keep people optimistic.
Yeah. In closing, again, I just want to really recommend that anyone listening who hasn't already done so, go to the www.larouchepac.com or to www.larouchepub.com. And watch the webcast from Washington, D.C., the meeting in Washington, D.C., which was webcast by LaRouche 2 days ago on Thursday, and the tremendous drama of the dialogue between him and elected officials from all over the country on exactly the question that you just posed. So with that, let's wind up for today. Thanks to Tony Chaitkin, to John Stewart, and to Harley Schlanger earlier, who had to get off, for this discussion of the Bloomberg fascist option, the Mussolini option, and LaRouche's solution to this crash, the alternative.